Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Talent Game podcast. I'm your host, Joe Burridge, and with me today is Mary Chan. Welcome to the podcast, Mary.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. And for our listeners who don't know who you are, please go ahead and introduce yourself.
So, yeah, I'm mostly from Ohio. I grew up in Westerville, which is a suburb outside of Columbus. And I've been living in New York for a very long time, 15 plus years. And I started my career at JP Morgan. I entered there all through college and then worked there for another 9-10 years. And that was kind of where I got my foundation in operations. So that's kind of what I specialize in. I'm specializing in like operations, finance, and employee experience. So at JP, I focused more on workforce planning and employee experience first for the operations teams on the trading floor. And then eventually I joined that team myself, which gave me a great perspective of, you know, the trading floor chaos and all of the challenges that they had, that clients had. And then I also did a lot of work relating to client experience directly. And then after that, I took a step back and took more ownership on solutions for creating efficiency on the teams. I led some software migrations and automated processes. And then after that, I found myself at Lightforge Games as operations manager. It was more of a balance of day-to-day studio operations, financial management, and employee experience. And I loved how versatile the role was. There was never a dull day. One day I was the recruiter. Another day I was the accountant. Another day I'd focus on team building and swag. So that was great. And then shortly after, I got promoted to senior operations manager, took more ownership on larger scale initiatives, like doing a complete overhaul on how we manage our corporate spending. Hiring work continued as well, but now I took more ownership on job role creation and working with hiring managers more closely. We also formally expanded our global footprint to 3 additional countries, and I got to plan our first company-wide summit in New York, which was a lot more work than I expected, but so worth it. And a lot of folks say it's still one of their most treasured memories of working at Lightforge, so I'm really proud of that. And then finally, my most recent role as operations director, I had official ownership over all things relating to studio operations, finance, and HR. Now it was more focused on, you know, refining things that had already been built out in prior time and figuring out how we can build on that in the future. But yeah, we did have to make the unfortunate call to pause development on our game since we couldn't secure additional funding. So the tail end of my time at Lightforge was focused on documentation and making sure everyone had, you know, the right resources as they offboarded. We downsized to a skeleton crew and, you know, also just making sure we were compliant with labor laws, severance packages, et cetera. So even though the ending was a bit more bleak, I feel like that in itself was also another unique experience that not a lot of people can say they have. And now I took a little time off, enjoyed the summer, and I'm trying to figure out what my next move is.
Thanks for that, Mary. That was an awesome introduction. And really sorry to hear, like I said, how Lightforge ended, because I know there's some really talented people there. And yeah, I just hope they all land on something fantastic. But sign of the times in the industry, right, more than anything. So also that story of going from trading JP Morgan over into games, I'm really looking forward to diving into that. But before we get into that, I just want to know, what are you playing right now?
Right now, I just started playing Baldur's Gate 3. I know I'm so late. I don't know. I think I was a little intimidated by it, but now I'm like so hooked and can't get enough. Yeah, that's what I've been mainly playing. But before that, I also was playing Fallout 4, I guess also a little late. I'm kind of catching up on some of these things, but I'm loving it. I've gotten a recommendation to start playing Diablo 4 at some point. But I also really like God of War, and all the Spider-Man games are really cool too. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. But oh, Zelda, of course, Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild. So, but yeah, most recently more PS5.
Right, okay. I feel like we basically have the same games catalog we're working through at the moment, which is interesting.
Nice.
Like, simultaneously trying to finish off Spider-Man 2, God of War, Baldur's Gate 3.
I still
have yet to start on Tears of the Kingdom. Shame. My game backlog is ever growing. I have to ask, Baldur's Gate 3, what class and race have you gone for?
So I'm a human cleric. I have to be honest, I got really overwhelmed with all the options. So I kind of hit randomize because I was like, I'm just going to like play and learn the mechanics and maybe I'll replay it. But then I actually really started liking the human cleric and I was like, okay, I actually want to stick with this. So I might do another playthrough at some point, but I don't feel like restarting it at all, even though I thought I would have wanted to. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, great. That ties into your ops role, right? You're the supportive. You're the supportive role of your party.
Exactly.
I'm really not surprised to hear that you're a cleric. Yeah, I went with a half orc druid, and apparently, okay. I don't want to spoil it or anything, but apparently, I'm following one of the most evil threads you can, and I've somehow managed to decapitate some really key characters already. But definitely, yeah, I'm one of those people that will not reload a save. I'm like, no, I've made my decision, and I am sticking with it. I highly regret many of those decisions, but I'm just carrying on through anyway. So,
yeah, love it.
Yeah, thank you for that. Right, we're getting back into your career then, I just mentioned that, yeah, moving from JP Morgan to, well, a small game studio is quite fascinating. So what did that whole thing come about?
Yeah, so I had been working at JP Morgan for over a decade at that point. I guess, you know, there's some portion that was internship and then portion that was like full-time employee. So yeah, collectively, it was over a decade. And then, you know, COVID hit. Everyone was contemplating their life and what they really wanted to do. And I realized that I really enjoyed, you know, the operational aspects of my job, but I wasn't actually passionate about the product or the work itself. And I just wanted to make our employees' lives easier and make the lives of our clients easier, but not super passionate about trading cash bonds. So I realized I could literally do the same thing anywhere, and I can still get the same fulfillment and might as well try another industry that might resonate more with me. Operations is a very transferable skill set, luckily. So I started looking at various industries for a brief time, and this was a little unexpected, but I actually started to feel like guilty. Like, it felt like I was like cheating on JP Morgan. They were the company that taught me everything I know. And I don't know, it was just really hard. So I felt like I was subconsciously like sabotaging myself as well, or unconsciously sabotaging myself. And then eventually I was like, okay, I just need to do a clean break so I can give this my all. I did not have a backup plan, but I knew I just needed to detach myself from that and just kind of take some time to be my best self for interviews. And of course, I also made sure I had enough saved up to give me some time I needed to decompress, and then also some time to look for a job after that. So I'm really grateful that I had, the privilege to do that. And then, yeah, I made it through a couple rounds, various companies, late rounds or final rounds. But I think, you know, in general, from my experience, I had two major issues. The first one was like just the lack of salary transparency. This was back in, you know, end of 2021, early 2022. This was before the law, like, you know, forced companies to list a lot of salary ranges in a lot of states. So I could spend a whole interview not knowing when they would share the range. And if they did, maybe it was like way lower than what I was expecting, or sometimes they wouldn't mention it at all. And then, if you ask at the end, even if it's after all the role questions and company questions, some people might be still very like off put by that. And it just kind of was a really difficult process to navigate. That wasn't great. And then the second issue was actually people not being sure that I'd be the right culture fit, which I think really meant, are you going to be too corporate and ruin it for everyone? So I get that, but that just isn't me. But I mean, obviously I had to put, you know, that corporate face on in situations, at JP Morgan, but there are actually a decent amount of informal, you know, situations as well. Especially you can imagine the trading floor chaos. People are, you know, it's fun. It's a good balance, fun and corporate, but I did kind of want to take away corporate from my life. So I was getting frustrated with those two things. So I took to LinkedIn. I usually never used LinkedIn before. I went through like the jobs tab only and maybe my timeline with people in my network, but I never actually looked at posts of people outside of my network. So I decided to do a search for salary transparency, and it was literally the first hit on my on that search, my future boss, you know, kind of saying like, we just got our Series A, we have open roles, we're a fully remote workplace, and we have salary transparency. And, at first I thought there's probably not a role for me, but I may as well peek and see what gaming life is all about. Like, I've always been a huge gamer, but I just assumed you had to be an artist or an engineer or a designer to work in video games. And I forgot that they'd need people to manage the non-game development aspects as well. So anyway, I clicked in to see what they had. And sure enough, there was an operations manager role. And I feel like my jaw dropped when I saw it probably. And, you know, the core responsibilities were all things I'd already done at JP Morgan. And then there are some other responsibilities towards the bottom that like seemed new to me, but I was super confident about tackling. And so I felt like, okay, maybe industry-wise is a long shot, but I know I can do this job really well. So I applied, and yeah, the rest was history. When I talked to my future boss in the first round, it felt like I'd known him for years, which I felt like was a telling sign about him and the company in general. And then learning about their values and the game itself made me really excited. And I'm really grateful that I've been able to make the switch. Hope to stay.
That's awesome. And I spent so much of my time making videos, writing content, speaking to people about how they can make that leap into games. They know that they love games, right? They love the art form of games. They love playing games. They are really drawn to the creativity of the industry. And here you are. You've just laid out exactly how you did it. So you're passionate about games. So you love playing games. You had a skill set that the company wanted, key thing. Mm-hmm. And then I love that the third thing you did there is that you were specifically looking for salary transparency, which is a really key indicator of the type of culture that a company has, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. It's a practical thing, right? You're like, right, I don't want to just waste my time and a company's time. I want to know that it's the right package. But I also feel like it is a green light in terms of the culture you're looking for. Talking of culture,
definitely.
How did you find that switch then? Going from, like, I guess from, there's a few switches here. So going from banking as an industry to games, and then also going from a very large company to a very small company, right? I'd love to hear how that, you know, whole experience was over the first few months or even that first year.
Yeah, I was a little nervous but excited. Like going from I think 250,000 employees to 18, and I didn't really know what to expect, but it was actually really awesome. Just knowing everybody at the company on an actual personal level, as opposed to like a ton of surface relationships. Working at a startup, you can get things done a lot faster. There's way less red tape, and people are much more open to trying things in a new way or challenging what they were doing before. I think with larger companies, they have such a history. They'll have like legacy systems that it takes forever to transfer from one system to another. And there's also all these there's just so many obstacles. Budget. For some reason, why does it feel like the bigger companies have tighter budgets than startups? Like they're just a lot more stringent about it. Maybe that's what they pay the CEOs. But anyway, yeah. So I guess there are just some differences with that. And I also just really liked the flexibility. Lightforge had a fully remote work play. We all did 40 hours a week on our own time, our own schedule. So it was asynchronous work. And that was really great as well. But yeah, I think it was definitely an adjustment, but it felt less drastic because I had been out from JP Morgan for a little bit. So I think it would have been way more of a culture shock if I had gone straight from JP Morgan 2 weeks later into Lightforge.
Yeah, because you had that break in between roles, like you were saying. Just curious, in your opinion, what strengths do you feel like you brought to the role and to the company coming from outside of games and also coming from a corporate background?
Yeah, so with JP Morgan, we were always having spikes in trade activity or just maybe someone leave and takes a while to replace them and such. So it was always just learning how to work and produce more with less. So automation, basically. I looked for every automation opportunity, even though we were a small startup and maybe we had the time to do something manually. Just why even do it manually? Because things are going to come up and we're going to end up being busier later anyway. So I just automated a bunch of our financial processes and onboarding. I wanted to make sure that I made a better candidate experience than the one I had experienced months prior. Like I didn't want to be ghosted. I didn't want to be in waiting and when they're going to call me back. I always told candidates listen, we're going to regroup with feedback on Friday. Hopefully we hear back by Monday, but if someone's out, then maybe it might be Tuesday, but that should be the latest. If it's going to go past that, I will reach out and let you know. I tried to be very clear, which I was told oftentimes was very refreshing and they were really relieved with that. So I think that, so it was a mix of, things I bring from JP Morgan, making things more efficient, cost saving. That's a big thing for me, and kind of making our money work for us. I kind of helped us get some more interest revenue in a sense, since we were pre-revenue in general for the game. And then, I just wanted to make the candidate experience better than what I had experienced. I actually had one job reach out to me 2 years after I applied to give me a rejection letter. I'm like, why even reach out at that point? But yeah, I was like, I didn't apply. Did somebody apply on my behalf? I was really confused. And I looked really deep in my inbox and I was like, oh, I did apply to that 2 years ago. So yeah.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow. 2 years. And I love that you bring it up, candidate experience. Naturally, me being in recruiting and talent for over a decade, I talk about candidate experience a lot. And in fact, with the founders in our current investment portfolio, is the key message. And I always tell them it's the foundation to the entire employment journey, right? Great candidate experience during that initial stages and the interview stages can help set you up for much better employee retention and just their loyalty and also an employee's sentiment towards a company, right? Very often I speak to people who join startups, like an 18-person company, and they join and they may be like, you know what, like, oh my goodness, the interview process was terrible, but I joined because I could see see all these other positives. So on that, do you have any advice or do you have any thoughts on that whole employee experience? I guess the attracting, developing, retaining talent.
Yeah, I definitely think transparency. Yeah, so like be open about your company culture, be open about the recruiting process, the timelines of things. And of course, things happen, delays happen. Just be open about that too. Send a follow up and say something just came up. And like, don't be dodgy with salary ranges, have competitive benefits. And I guess definitely don't be one of those companies that kind of has like a ridiculously low salary range and then say you're making up for it with benefits because benefits don't pay the bills. So benefits are an added plus, but they shouldn't be, 80% of your compensation structure. And then also like explaining what work-life balance looks like there. I think, you know, people really, especially with COVID, people are, you know, realizing that they need to prioritize their life around their job as opposed to prioritize their work around their life as opposed to their life around their job. So I think that that's really important from a company perspective. But I also think in terms of attracting talent, you should definitely also ask for recruiting help when you need it. So we had some like incredibly niche roles to fill, especially in the art department. And we tried looking for folks the old fashioned way and quickly realized it just wasn't going to cut it. I mean, there were some candidates that maybe would have been okay, but it just didn't feel right. So we ended up doing a great collaboration with an external recruiting firm, and they ended up helping us fill a ton of roles, even in the engineering department as well, design too. So they were really wonderful. Actually, it's LFM Talent. I don't know if you've heard of them or worked with them before, but I'd highly recommend. But yeah, just kind of like, you're going to be wasting so many company resources if you're trying to find your own candidates on your own, and you just need to acknowledge when you're just actually wasting more time. You might as well just like find some external help.
Yeah, fantastic. And naturally, I'm always going to say yes, recruiting support, but that very, very often is the learning curve that smaller companies, you know, there's plenty of hiring managers that I've worked with in much larger companies that I've been at that have a real skewed view on what recruiting is. You know, surely you just post the advert and you hire the best one. It's like, no, when we're purposely building a company and a culture, and we have a very niche product, like video games are a niche product, right? And they require a really specific set of skills. Surely we want to be going out there and purposely finding the right people that we want, both in skill set and in culture. So do you, when it comes to that, then you've just hinted at like really purposeful, specific recruiting support. What are the traits then that you were looking for at Lightforge? Like what were some of the real standout, whether it's skills or on the softer side, you know, parts of people's personality that you would always be looking for?
Yeah, I definitely think personality is more important. I feel like, you know, some of these skills can be taught. Of course, if you're hiring someone for a very senior role, they still need to have some of those core skills, but personality can't be taught. And obviously we shouldn't be trying to change anybody. But I think that like the biggest traits would be, I think, adaptability. So like iterations are just so crucial in game development in general, and just being agile. I feel like a lot of roles actually tend to say, you know, they want comfort with ambiguity, which is okay, but I actually don't think ambiguity should be the constant all the time. That should be like a temporary circumstance until a decision is made and there's finally a clarity. Maybe there's like a large aspect that's ambiguous, and then you kind of have a timeline of when each decision will be made to kind of get you towards that final stage of clarity too, and, you know, focusing on the next thing. So yeah, I would just say adaptability. You don't want someone who's going to say, well, my previous experience, I always did it this way, and that's how I would do it going forward. You want someone who's going to say, my company used to do this. It taught me the importance of X, Y, and Z, and I feel like I can bring that experience and further enhance it, you know, this time around with whatever task we're currently doing. So it's kind of like innovation and using your prior experience. Of course, it's important, but just not doing a carbon copy of the same thing. And then kind of tied in, I would say, collaboration. So, you know, if you need someone who's be willing to hear all sides of the debate before a decision is made and not being stubborn and set in their ways. So I think those are all really important aspects. And I do think a lot of skills can be taught.
I like that. It also reminds me of strong opinions loosely held, right, when it comes to this adaptability. So I want you to come with ideas. Where have those ideas come from? Previous job, any learning you've been doing? But know that this company may turn on the dime, as a the Americans say. And we need to pivot depending on the new information that comes in. So I really like that, the adaptability and agility. I also really like the dispelling, being comfortable with ambiguity. Oh my goodness, the amount of times I've heard that over and over again. Actually, I think you saying that, you're hinting at, is kind of like the opposite. It's like there's something ambiguous, and I want you to be more comfortable with diving in there and figuring it out and getting a plan together and be more action oriented. Is there so adaptability and collaboration, right? Those are the big two. What are some ways that you would tease that out during an interview process, or you've just started working with someone who already works there for the first time, like that, or when you meet someone, like, well, what are some of the ways that you would figure out if someone has these traits?
Yeah, I would I like to ask people about what their experience has been when they've been working on one project and then had to shift gears quickly and move on to the next thing. And just kind of even just gauging their reaction of recalling that experience is really telling. And then also asking them like examples of how they've used a prior project to influence how they behave in a future project as well. The way they get there and like the way they describe it, the way they react, that is just as telling as the answer. And also just kind of gauging their comfort level on startup life. I mean, startup life, there are of course some stereotypes of startup life, and then there's a reality of startup life. But I think if somebody is super, uncomfortable, suspicious, I feel then it's probably not going to be a good fit. But if they seem like they're maybe not totally sure of what it would entail, but they're open to it and they're excited about it and they're excited to kind of grow and figure things out sometimes, I think that's a really good sign.
So what are those stereotypes and realities of startup life?
I think one of the biggest ones is that since you're so short staff, everyone's working constantly all the time. And I mean, that was the furthest from the truth for us. We were very serious about work-life balance, but I mean, we weren't working all the time, but I think the reality is sometimes, we had to wear different hats. Well, maybe we didn't expect to, but it ended up being fine. And, we still didn't have to work late hours just because we were wearing different hats. We just had, reprioritize some of the other things for the next week or something. So, yeah, I'd say that's one. Also, people sometimes assume that because we're a startup, we're not going to have the right resources to do the work that they need. That's not necessarily true either. We just, as long as you explain why you need it, how it impacts the game, and have a compelling reason, then I don't think we actually turn down a ton of software. I can't even think of one right now. Or we're always down to try trial and see what happens. If it doesn't seem like it's panning out, then we could move on. So I think a lot of people think that startups will like make you work a lot and just crunch, and then they also won't even give you the resources you need to succeed, which I feel is farthest from the truth.
I
do think, I don't know if all startups do this, but I would say that another thing we did that I really appreciated was, we were always very transparent with all of our employees about like runway and, when we were planning on getting funding and all these things. So everyone signed up knowing that, worst case scenario, we'll run out of money by X month. And we actually, when we kind of started to realize that, the industry wasn't doing great and that, the funding rounds were a little harder than we had anticipated, we still put some like austerity measures in place to kind of stretch it out. So we were able to stretch out our runway even further than what anyone had signed on for. And I just feel like just being transparent with everyone. I mean, this is people's livelihoods. Like this is their lives. We need to be, honest and not just say something's in the works and then, up until the very last second, say it's not going to work out. We're going to do everything we can to tell you the reality of where we are. And I think that maybe some people have that stereotype on startups, like dodginess around their financials and just telling everyone it's fine, just keep working. But no, we were very, very open about that.
And that's how the best companies should run, not just startups, right? And that level of transparency around the finances and the mission and the goal and everything else, and being like, yes, we work really hard here because we all really want this company to succeed, but not at the offset of your own health and everything else. So that's a great answer. Hey, we are approaching the end of the podcast here. As always, Mary, I feel like we could continue on chatting about these aspects here. But I really, really enjoyed your takes on specifically on attracting, retaining talent, especially around candidate experience. So your journey into the games industry, some of the top traits that you look for, especially when it comes to building a culture. So thank you so much for all of that. My last question that I'm going to throw to you that I give to everyone is, what's your favorite interview question?
Yeah, I do like when work-life balance is discussed. And I like when, you know, there's, you know, a few minutes where we got to get to talk about like ourselves as people as opposed to the work itself. I feel like that's still telling on how they will be as an employee. And I feel like it's telling, you know, from a candidate perspective as well, how they will be as a hiring manager, for instance, or how the company culture will be. So like if somebody feels like they can be honest about their work-life balance and they can be open about the work-life balance and honest about their life and just kind of getting to know you, it's kind of a good sign. And that actually does remind me of, you know, a feature at Lightforge that I also really liked was, and kind of what I was looking for after I left JP Morgan was, you know, they wanted you to feel comfortable to be your most authentic self. You obviously didn't need to share anything about your life if you weren't comfortable, but you know, if you wanted to, you could feel like there's a safe space. And, you know, they encouraged everyone to just not have a work persona and a life persona, just kind of having one persona, which is pretty nice and refreshing. And odd that more people don't say that, but you know, it's important.
Yeah. Well, having one persona, I guess, saves you a lot of mental energy.
Yes.
And also within games as well. Like I think about before I got into games, I was very much known as the gamer within my team or within the office or something like that. They're like, ah, Joe just talked about video games all the time. He's organizing another LAN party. He's like, you know, these sort of things. And then just being like turning up to work and then being surrounded by people who not only love this topic, but have made it their entire life work. It's like, I found my people, found this common connection just in the most basic things of why we turn up to work is really, really satisfying.
My childhood friends and college friends, like none of them are gamers. And I don't really have anyone in my personal life besides my fiance that plays video games. And so it's nice to, I felt the exact same way, JP. Like I felt almost like embarrassed to talk about being a gamer. And I love that I get to be my most authentic self and just talk about all the hours I'd spend playing, whatever, Baldur's Gate, Skyrim. Oh yeah, that's another good one.
Any talent topics that we haven't got to today that you wanted to cover and that you've prepared to talk about?
Yeah. So I think, you know, developing talent and retaining talent are still really important. So I think like for developing talent, I definitely think people need to keep your team learning, you know, invest in your team, whether it's a workshop, a conference, or even some executive coaching. Employees are going to grow so much faster and do better work when they feel supported and, you know, feel like you're investing in their development. And then having a solid performance roadmap. So we had very transparent guidelines by department showing like what expectations would be at a given level and what would be expected of them if they wanted to progress. So it's a much better than having, you know, ambiguous guidelines and just kind of not really knowing, and especially also giving like continuous feedback. So I guess that also continuous feedback probably ties into the retaining as well, but just kind of no one wants to hear their feedback for the first time on a quarterly basis or a, you know, biannual basis. So keep people motivated and feeling support in real time by, you know, giving them real time feedback on how they can grow. And then I guess diving back in or moving over into retaining more, I think keeping your promises is really important. I know we talked about work-life balance a bunch. You know, you should be matching or exceeding the expectations that were set during the recruiting phase when you're talking about work-life balance and company culture. So I think that's vital. And then finally, I think recognizing contributions, which ties in with feedback, but I think recognizing contributions publicly are also, that's really important, like making sure that they're proud of what they worked on and, you know, it gives them motivation to keep going. So I think those are really important.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Mary, you've plucked some things right off the playbook. So I'm like advising to some of the founders here as well. yeah, I totally agree. And just curious, did you, when you arrived at Lightforge then, did you, were these things in place or were these, some of these aspects here, like you said, employee recognition, feedback, having some sort of leveling guidelines, matching or exceeding expectations from the recruitment process, are these things that you help implement or are these things that were already there and that you got to build up upon?
I think those were all things that maybe, you know, a deeper level that I would want in a company, but I didn't necessarily some of these things I didn't necessarily, I would want in a company, but I didn't actually think would actually be possible. Or, like, you know, some companies are, the version of employee engagement and employee experience at larger companies could be like, you know, a pizza party or like a happy hour. And then that's kind of it. And then, or, you know, they do the performance management, but it's not. But yeah, I feel like I learned so much at Lightforge on a deeper level. They're all things that I would have wanted for out of a company, but I thought was too much to ask. That's basically it. So I think that, yeah, I'm really grateful for my time at Lightforge. It really helped, you know, help me be the HR ops person that I always wanted to be, and taught me, you know, how to actually carry out those things. Because you can still want to be, you know, a solid HR person or a solid ops person and be there for them. And if you don't know how, then it might not work.
Almost gives me goosebumps just saying about that, just because it's like, yeah, that's the dream. That's the dream, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Understanding, being like, oh, wait, this is what I'd absolutely love from mm-hmm. the company. Both in terms, oh, it makes games, and that's what I love to do. But also just all of these other factors about your life and the way it have such a massive positive impact on your life. And then being in a position to make those changes and see them come to life. That's fantastic. And it's kind of the entire reason this podcast, I hope, exists, to yeah. relay this information to people and see them make work better or really get the most out of their talent in a meaningful way. So thanks for that, Mary. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And the last thing, actually, I think is really important. I think that, you know, remote work is here to stay, whether people like it or not, or, you know, hybrid too. But I think that I am seeing a lot of companies that are like insisting on on-site. And I do feel like there is value in some on-site collaboration. So I'm a big fan of like off-sites and maybe even having, I've seen some companies that do like ad hoc hybrid, where it's kind of more like, you know, you come into the office once a month or once a quarter or a couple times a quarter, something that's pre-established so people can plan their lives around it. But just like understanding that this 5 days a week in the office is just not, it's just a thing of the past now. So I think that that's something that people also need to kind of acknowledge as they look at their workforce and their employee culture.
Yeah, there's always trade-offs to all of these scenarios, and it's just understanding what you want your company culture to be and what are you willing to trade off for that. I'm always going to be a massive advocate of remote work, because remote work has significantly improved my life. I've mm-hmm. moved back to be closer to friends and family and build my own family with my kids and everything else. If I still lived in London and was required to live there, I wouldn't have a garden that so I probably wouldn't have had the number of kids I've had or had my dog or even be in proximity to close friends and family. So so many benefits. And I'm glad that startups especially tend to take advantage of this. And it's this whole massive experiment is playing out. So I think if return to work is done for the right reasons, and those reasons are really clearly explained to employees, taking on employee data, then I think it can be done well. But yeah, that's a whole another massive topic that we don't have time to get into today, but thanks for giving me your take on that. So with that, Mary, we have reached the end. So just to say thank you so much for coming on. I love that how you were able to very concisely dive into so many of these topics here, and all of that experience that you took from JP Morgan into Lightforge, and in that really intense amount of time during Lightforge, just over 2 years, that you achieved all that. It was awesome. Thank you so much for telling us the story. Wishing you the very, very best of luck for what's just around the corner as well. So thank you. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.